language drives change, right? So if I'm constantly talking about my culture, whatever it is, and I believe in it, and I have a relationship that's built on trust with my players, they believe in me and what I'm saying, guess what? They're going to have that same culture.
Joining me on the podcast today is Anthony Slagle, who is a linebacker for The Ohio State University, went on to play for the Cincinnati Bengals, and then came back to Ohio State as a strength and conditioning coach, and now has branched out on his own with his company called The Difference. And we'll talk about exactly what that is as we go through the podcast. But Anthony, I really appreciate you joining us here.
Brother, thanks for having me on. Can't wait.
I want to make sure our listeners know everything about you. I know you shared something with me that you were a multi-sport guy coming out of high school, that you didn't just train for football. You excelled in football. You also excelled in wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I was born in Iowa. My dad was a college and high school football coach, and then moved to Texas when I was young, probably about three. So just kind of grew up there, started wrestling when I was six, right? My dad wouldn't let me play football until I was in he wanted to be junior high. I ended up playing in fifth grade, but, you know, just to be tough, right? To learn discipline, to learn training. And so, and I played baseball. I was probably better at baseball than I was at anything else. And it was one of those deals where when I was a freshman in high school and I'd already been playing like high school level travel baseball. And then I get to my freshman year and, you know, I'm great in wrestling. I'm great. I started on varsity as a freshman at linebacker, and now it's time for baseball, and I'm playing baseball. And it was like, well, you're going to start on the JV, and they're going to work your way up. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I can go right now. And so then I kind of decided, like, you know what? I'm going to go two sports, and I just stuck with wrestling and football. But really, the key thing for me, and just even how I'm raising my children, it's what are they passionate about, and do you go at it with a great attitude and great effort, period. And that's one thing my dad instilled in me as far as like the weight room very, very early on. Growing up, I went to a gym called Metroflex Gym. You guys can look it up. It's an old school, hardcore bodybuilding, powerlifting weight room. And I just remember very vividly 1992 walking in there, and it was Tupac and just going, you know, cuss words all over the place. And I immediately thought of Rocky IV because it was just dirty and nasty. It was probably staph infection running amok in there, but it was just the attitude and intensity of which people trained. And now it drew me in. I was like, I wanted that, you know? And so really for me, that development of the training aspect and how, you know, I was a late bloomer, but I knew that even when I was young, when I was 12, you know, and then going into junior high, like, all right, if I'm not as big as everybody else, I got to make sure that I'm stronger than everybody else. I got to make sure that I'm physically, mentally, and emotionally tougher than everybody else. And my dad instilled that in me, that the only place that you can get that is the weight room, because it translates to all sports, right? The athletic position translates to all sports. So how do we train that? So really early on, love training, definitely helped me in wrestling because I wasn't a great technician, but I was just physically tough. Right. And so that helped me win a lot. And then especially in football, it carried over, because even though I was a freshman, I was still strong enough to be able to go against seniors in high school because of that background in training and wrestling. So it's one of those things. My kids, they play multiple sports. They play, you know, my oldest plays basketball and baseball. He's not really the mentality of a football kid. And I don't want to force him into something that he's not. And I tell him the only way you're going to play football is if you train with dad. Because I know what it takes, right? Now, my youngest son, he's crazy, and he loves contact. Guess what? When you're old enough and you train with dad, you can play football, because my dad really taught me the game from being a ball boy and working in the equipment room and just hanging out with him, watching film. He taught me the concept of the game, which I think a lot of people don't teach. Really what makes Ohio State successful, they teach concepts. And when I understand the concepts and the why of what I'm looking at when I'm playing linebacker, I can react and respond really quickly to the level of which I've been trained, right? So those are things that I'm kind of instilling in them now, but definitely helped me grow into being, you know, an elite-level wrestler and linebacker in high school.
I think you'll agree with this, and I saw a really good quote on Twitter the other day. and I don't recall what coach it's from, but he put out there that linebacker's not a position, it's a mentality. And, you know, that's kind of what you talked about here, your approach in the weight room, how you attack things. I would imagine you had that linebacker mentality in playing your other sports as well. And I would say you probably have that linebacker mentality in how you're approaching business and attacking life. For you, when you think of that idea of linebacker being a mentality, what things come to mind and what is part of that mentality?
Yeah, I just say all the time, attack and dominate, you know. And part of that for me is I remember growing up, fullback and linebacker, it's a very similar state of mind. I remember growing up, I used to introduce myself as Anthony Schlegel fullback because I love Tom Rathman, right? I had a flat top. Tom Rathman had a flat top. He had big traps. Like, I called them, you know, bumps. Like, I want a big bumps, Dad. And as I got older, like, here's how you get big bumps. Heavy shrugs, you know. But then I saw NFL films, and they had a thing on Dick Butkus. And I was like, I'm done. Like, it's Anthony Schlegel linebacker from now on. And I wore 51. And, you know, just the mentality of I can make every play doing my job, but also running the show. Right? Like, that's a different mindset, but because you just can't flip a switch. And that's what I see with a lot of kids today, even in college and especially young, like, listen, you respond to a level of what you've been trained, right? Train like you fight like you train. That's the weight room. That's how I attack film study. That's how I attack practice. Like, you just can't flip a switch on Friday or Saturday or Sunday and say, hey, I'm going to go out here and ball out when you don't ball out when you're in the weight room, right? The mentality of, like, even how I taught strength conditioning. Like, when I go into a rack, it's me versus that weight on that play. Like, that's the mindset. When I put my hands on the bar to squat and I know my coaching cues, right? Chest up, eyes up, abs tight, set the hips, right? Rack it like a dude. That's the same thing as alignment, assignment, alerts, and adjustments on my pre-snap reads. It's that mindset of how I approach every single detail of my life. And that's, I think, what he's talking about, that mentality and having a linebacker mentality. But how do you instill that in young people on a day-to-day basis, right? Those are things that of which I think have to be taught. And I think that language Coach Meyer talks about all the time, culture, whatever it is, and I believe in it, and I have a relationship that's built on trust with my players, they believe in me and what I'm saying, guess what? They're going to have that same culture. Or if I'm talking hands and feet, or if I'm talking strength conditioning, right, digging your fingers into the ground just a little bit harder. Not for you, not for me, but for your teammate. That's what drives the change and drives that mentality. So it's constantly, how are we developing our kids from that mindset, that linebacker mentality, regardless of the position? Because if they all had that, guess what? Now you're raising up that middle 80. And a lot of people talk about the 10-80-10 rule. But great teams is all about developing the 80. If I move the bottom 80 into the top 80 and the top 80 into my top 10, I'm very front loaded with a lot of dudes that are, you know, some more gifted than others, but they're on with the same mindset of accomplishing the mission at hand. Like, that's what you want. That's how great teams are made. And I've seen it. It's tried and true.
Coach, and I really do want to dig into what you talked about there, alignment, assignment, alerts, and adjustments. Before we go there, you had the opportunity to work with two great coaches, number one to play for and then work with, Hall of Fame coach Jim Tressel. What was that experience like for you both as a player and a coach? And, you know, we always learn from our coaches and the leaders in our lives. So what did you really take away from those experiences with Coach Tressel?
Well, you know, I've been very blessed, Keith. So I started off at the Air Force Academy, and I had another Hall of Fame coach at Fisher and Berry. And my D coordinator was Richard Bell, who probably will be a Hall of Fame. I mean, he's unbelievable. And then I came to Ohio State, and here's the funny thing. I came to Ohio State because it was the most similar to the Academy. Like, I didn't leave the Academy for military reasons. Because of the military, it was probably because of myself, because I was an absolute turd while I was there, and I got in a lot of trouble with other cadets. But when I decided to come to the Ohio State University, meeting Jim Tressel, meeting Mark D'Antonio, who's actually coached by Richard Bell at South Carolina, because Mark D'Antonio went to West Point before he went to South Carolina. But just how it was so similar with the relationships and the brotherhood. Like, there's really you know, besides the academies, and I've been all over the country, Ohio State has the best brotherhood as far as, like, from young to old. You know, I can call up Archie Griffin right now, or, you know, all the guys that I played with, or Ryan Shazier, or Cam Hayward, guys that I didn't play with that were younger than me, or guys that I coached, right? Like, it's just this close-knit group of dudes, and that's what really drew me to Ohio State. And then learning from Tress. Tress was so amazing at the relationship. I mean, he had this unique ability. I mean, being all of probably 5'7 or 5'8, I don't know how tall he is, but he could pull his glasses down and make you feel as though he's looking down at you, though he's standing below you, right? I mean, he had that presence, and instilling in us the blocko of life and how it's always about the relationship. It's always about your teammate. It's always about your faith and, like, going through these things and listening to our goals and talking to our position coaches and how we can achieve. Like, he was just phenomenal at the relationship, and it's why he's the only president in the United States of a university that doesn't have a doctorate, because his emotional intelligence is just off the chart, you know? And he was able to recruit some great guys. I mean, the talent that we had in the early 2000s that I played with, I mean, when I graduated, when I got drafted in the third round by the Jets, we had 5 first round draft picks, 5, crazy talk. You know, the year before, I think, or 2 years before, in the 04 draft, they had 14 guys drafted. I mean, it was just amazing what he could do, but it was all about the relationship with him and trust. And so that's definitely something that, you know, one of my elite things that I have is because I'm really good at the relationships, which is why I'm able to sell my product all over the country, is because I can just relate to everybody. And one of those things that I learned that from Jim Tressel.
So then you had the ability to stay on staff when Coach Urban Meyer came in, and I know right now you're working with Coach Meyer at the Fisher School of Business on a leadership class. We'll talk about that in a second. But also then I'm sure the other guy who's probably a big influence is Coach Marotti, who's a big part of building the culture there. Let's talk about, you know, again, I guess what you picked up from both of those guys. We'll start with Coach Meyer.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Meyer is at, like, another level when it comes to motivating, and I would even say marketing, to 18 to 22-year-olds and his staff, right? Like, I mean, if you look at it, if you got a really, you know, kind of lackluster entry hall, right, in your offices, like, do coaches really want to come to work? I mean, he blew all that up. Like, I mean, you want to come to work at Ohio State. The brand, you know, it isn't there every single day. Like, you got to see it, right? Like, I got a great office. I got a great environment. I got all the tools that I need. And you can think outside the box and have those tools. It's not about money, but it's about how do I motivate my coaches to want to go out on the road, recruit the type of dudes that we need, coach the crap out of them, right? And here's my standard. I mean, the cool thing is at Ohio State, everybody coaches the dynamic warm-up. Think about that. How many coaches just leave it up to the strength coach to coach the dynamic? Probably a lot. At Ohio State, everybody coaches. And that's the beauty about it, right? You're a coach in the weight room the same way you're a coach on the field with juice, period. There's only one standard, right? If you don't do that, you can't be on staff. That's just it, right? So when we're warming up dudes, Larry Johnson, probably the best D-line coach in the country, he's coaching his dudes up on a dynamic warm-up. Right? I mean, it's unbelievable. So the standard, the level which he coaches and motivates his coaches to teach better. I remember one time he made all the coaches change their rooms so that they could have a better understanding of how to teach their guys, because like everybody else, you get comfortable teaching a certain way. But what if that kid, because he's the most important piece to the puzzle, doesn't learn from the way you teach? Like, you got to change your environment to constantly be evolving yourself as to how I articulate and teach concepts and what we're doing. So he made them move rooms and change the aesthetics, right? In the weight room, we do the same thing. We do it with different events that we create in the weight room at different times. The kids don't know, because as an individual, all we want to do all the time, all people, we want to know what's going on. Why? So we can pace ourselves. Think about it. Like, that's Why do kids want to see their workout? They want to know when they got to spill it. They want to know what kind of finisher we got today so they can have a little gas in the tank, right? So they can show out. I don't want that. I want to develop you from start to finish. And by the end, I hope you're dying. But as we go through this program at the end and we build up your work capacity and your training level, like you're going to be able to crush the entire workout. Like that's the goal. I don't want super savers, man. I want dudes to spill it from start to finish. Because that's how you teach and create toughness in your program, right? So those are all the things that he did, and he worked hand in hand with Coach Mick on that, which was one of the things that I learned from Urban, and it was that relationship that he had with Coach Marotti, and why, you know, when I got out of coaching, at the time, I didn't really have anybody that I wanted to go be a head strength coach with that shared that same view, because they together are building the team, and it's truly Coach Mick's team from January to August. It is. And then he hands the team over to Coach Meyer in a ceremony because he did his job to develop them. Now they're yours. You know, like that's unbelievable to me. But it's consistent language. It's a high standard of excellence. And it's where is every kid and how are we maximizing their genetic potential, keeping them safe, and moving them constantly one step at a time, theory of marginal gains. It's awesome. So, yeah, I mean, just they've done a tremendous amount for me in my development. And then to talk a little bit about Coach Mick. Coach Mick told me when I first got started as a strength coach, I had job opportunities. And he's like, you really need, if you're going to stay in this profession, you need to get a master's. And so Bobby Carpenter, who I played with, we were like, well, I'm going to get a master's. He's like, I'm going to get a master's because the NFL Trust had a thing where they can give you some assistance. And being an employee at Ohio State, they give you some assistance. And I didn't want to do a one-year sports admin. I went and did an MBA. And because I thought the landscape of college football was changing, this was back in 2013, because I viewed the strength and conditioning coach as the chief operating officer of Ohio State Incorporated. You know, or I should say Ohio State LLC football, right? Ohio State Inc. is Gene Smith, right? Ohio State Football LLC, that's Urban Meyer, now Ryan Day, and then Chief Operating Officer Mickey Marotti. You know, like that's how I see it, right? So day-to-day operations, I wanted to learn that. I wanted to learn the financial tools to build a $1 million weight room and have a budget, and I want to understand marketing because I'm constantly marketing to my guys when they come into the weight room, whether it's aesthetics or the weights or the music, right? Like at the end of the day, it's all about the players and how do I move them one step closer to their genetic potential? Like that's my job. So I want to learn all those different things. So that's why I did an MBA. And Coach Mick pushed me that way. And he was also gracious enough, didn't cut my hours back, right? I mean, you're still working 85 hours a week trying to win the national championship in 2014. But he took a little bit off my plate, and it's a huge credit to the other guys in our staff that picked up a little bit of that slack while I was going and getting that MBA. And now, consequently, there's been three other guys that are on his staff that went out and got masters from Ohio State because he's constantly developing his staff. And it's just a credit to him and why you're seeing his branch of strength conditioning coaches now all over the place, all over the country.
I would say in one thing that I notice about, you know, what Coach Marotti has done, and just the, you could tell that number one, there's a ton of attention to detail. So when you go out to, you know, I always make it a point to get out to a spring ball practice. You go out to that practice, you see detail to the highest level. But the other thing is just, there's a feeling of authenticity and buy-in behind everything you guys do from, I think, one of the neatest traditions in that's developing college football with the quick cals and how like the whole, you know, student section now has become a part of that band, everybody. Do you see a lot of teams who try to come up with, I guess, something that's gimmicky that shows, you know, these guys are ready to go, they're focused, whatever. And then it fizzles out. It seems in most places, those things fizzle out, but like, it's one of the coolest things. In fact, we were just, you know, we're going through like a sports memorabilia shop the other day, and two of the coolest pictures I saw were the guys sitting there in their stances, ready to do quick cals with the band directly across them. Like, to me, there's something there that Coach Mick is doing like I said, that's just authentic, that goes to a different level than what a lot of other guys would do. And like you said, you probably don't want to go anywhere else in the country after you've been here.
Yeah, I mean, the number one thing, and this is why, you know, what's cool about what I've been able to do and been a part of, like, strength conditioning, right? I can give you the program at Ohio State. Like, you can't replicate it unless you're totally bought into it, right? I mean, that's the thing. Like, hey, here's our program. Here's what we do. But can you do it the way that we do it, right? Because it is authentic. It is real. I mean, it's in your face. There's going to be times where guys come after you, like, in the weight room because you're pushing them. And you know what? Stuff happens, you know? But guess what? You pick them back up and you give them a hug. And sometimes you got to get them a size 12 and a half up the butt. Sometimes you got to pat them on the back. Sometimes you got to get in their grill. That's what it is. But it's authentic. It's just, it's us maximizing you. And, you know, the quick cows are just attention to detail, right? It's getting you locked in, focused in on the whistle. Like, that's it. It's like time to get locked in. That's what it does, right? So now you do it after the warm-ups, boom, ready to go, right? We do our quick cows. Now you're locked in. And that's how we train. That's how they practice, right? That's how they do film study. You know, the standard was 46 seconds of point A to point B of competitive excellence. Like, that's it. You know, if you want to bring in something else and you want to aspire to be a head coach, that's great. But guess what? You do it on your time when you're the head coach. Here, this is what we do, right? We go every drill that we do in the weight room. It's 4 to 6 seconds. There's a start and there's a finish. Why? Because we want you to go plus two. And if you don't go plus two, it's a loaf. And when we call you out for being a loaf, you know in your heart of hearts that you loafed. And guess what? We're going to put it on the board and your coaches will see it and your teammates will see that you loafed on them. But you can only do that if the players know that you have their best interest and you're trying to move their needle to be a great teammate and to achieve their goals, right? Like, that's what they done. So when you do a quick cows, it's not gimmicky. It's 100% real. It's 100% authentic. And you do it in January, just like you do it on game day, because it's ingrained and part of your program. Coach Meyer talks about it all the time. Average coaches have quotes. Good coaches have a plan. Great coaches have a system. It's a system at Ohio State. That's it. You're not slapping quotes or doing things and hoping they stick. Right? It's tried and true. It's testimony, right? It's not theory. But if you do it from start to finish and you're all in and you're completely sold, guess what? Your players are going to be completely sold.
Well, Anthony, we're going to dive back down this rabbit hole of linebacker play. I appreciate you sharing those stories. That's awesome and learning about those guys and what they do. But teaching, you talked about how Urban Meyer made the coaches flip around their classroom to make sure that you're teaching. And you know, for you in playing linebacker, to be able to diagnose a play, go make a play physically, all those things, alignment, assignment, alerts, and adjustments, as you mentioned before. Let's talk about those and how do you train those into a linebacker?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one, you teach the concept, right? Like, what are we doing in cover three? What are we doing in cover two? What are we doing in field eight, right? Like, what is my alignment, right? Am I on a 30, right? Am I over on a 50? Like, where am I? Where's the depth, right? Like, okay, are my toes at 4.5, right? Do I have a hard time seeing, right? Some guys want to be closer to the line than others, right? Like, all those different things go into my alignment. Okay, what is my assignment, right? Okay, field A, I got a safety coming down, all right? So I got to be over the top on a weak side, you know, ISO, or I'm going to hit this one in the B gap and I'm spilling it to my safety, okay? Where's my match, right? I'm pushing hard to three, okay? Like, where is three? Okay, alignment and assignment. Then you got your alerts, which is the game. That's the game, right? So now I'm like, okay, we got one back, one gap. I got 3-by-1. Where's my cover? Is he a fast tight end or a slow tight end, right? Can I fit this gap, right? So where do I need to move over? Do I need a boss over, do a plus one? Do I need to deepen up because I got my three guy now is like a Wes Welker type, you know? And I'm a, you know, average speed linebacker. Well, guess what? Now I know down and distance, right? So part of that alignment, assignment, alerts, down and distance. Where are they trying to go? Where are my sticks? All of that then is processed in that bucket, right? Alignment, assignment, alerts, and adjustments. That's where my adjustments come in. Okay, now they're in 3-by-1. They motion over to 2-by-2. or they motion a guy back into the backfield. I already knew that he was coming back in, so I didn't have to boss over, right? Because I know their splits. Adjust. Running back's at 6 yards. Okay, I can deep it up. I think it's a pass. All right, I'm blitzing now. All right, every time I've watched this center, he's popping his head up. Now I can time my blitz. Where does my depth have to be for me to hit this blitz on time so A.J. Hawk can wrap around and be a clean hitter, right? Like, all those things are processed, rapid, you know, split-second type stuff. But I'm going through that process, and I go through that process in spring ball and in fall camp and during the season. And guess what? On game day, boom, it's rapid fire, right? But that's my mental process, and I'm going to sign my alerts and adjustment. And everything can be based off of that. You know, I just think I really learned that when I was playing for Tress and D'Antonio and Jim Haycock and Luke Fickell. But it's something that I've always carried with me. And it's so true in business. Like, all right, what's my standard operating procedure? What happens if a pad breaks? What happens, you know, where are my adjustments? What am I alert to? Is there somebody else that could potentially copy what I'm doing? Right? How am I negating that? Right? Who are key partnerships that I want to have? Right? How do I adjust off that? You know, all those things go together, and it's just something that you can also translate to other things besides football. But it's a great way of teaching concepts.
As you look back at, you know, some you really named some great names there, Coach Haycock, Fickell, like all D'Antonio, Tress, all those guys. As you look at them as teachers of the game, right, and just remembering back to those days, whether it's, you know, in their classroom or in the walkthrough, what were the best things those guys did to reach you as a student of the game, to reach you, to be able to get you to play with, you know, quick reaction on the field?
Yeah, my dad taught me how to watch film because he was a coach, right? So I loved watching film. I wanted to be a student of the game. And when you're like me or like a James Laurinaitis, you know, like, you're not Ryan Shazier, who runs a 4.4, but AJ could run a 4.4, so I didn't put him in there. But like, you have to be able to anticipate where it's going to hit. You know what I'm saying? And I can only do that through film study. If I like, all right, I know they can only run one play that side, one play. And if they run it, this is what I see when they run that one play. I know I can get there from this depth and this alignment. Why do I got to give it up? You know, why do I got to, you know, sell my head on this when 80% of all the other things they're going to do are going to be to this side? So I'm going to put myself in a great position based upon my athletic ability to go handle my business on this side, right? Like, that's where it all came through. And you know, when you're able to articulate that to a coach and he knows that you know that and where the deficiencies are in our defense, but yet you can still get there and here's what you're seeing, like, they're going to give you a little bit of freedom because they know of all the time, energy, and effort that you spent watching film, right? And that comes with that trust factor. That comes with that consistency factor. Listen, this dude grades out 85, 90% every single time. Why? He knows the game. He's putting himself in a good position. He's making plays that he shouldn't make in this defense, but he's able to do it because he's putting himself in the right position. I have trust with him, right? Hey, when we're out in the field and he knows the game and we're in a bad call, he knows that, boom, based on what he sees, he can get us into the right defense. I had a lot of freedom with that when I was at the Air Force Academy in Ohio State. We ran a 3.35 at the Air Force Academy, ran a 4.3, but people don't really realize this. We ran a lot of nickel when I was at Ohio. We probably ran 80% nickel in 2005 and had one of the best defenses in the country. But because we had Dante Widner as a safety who played nickel, and we had Bobby Carpenter who could rush the passer, he played a stand-up five technique or put his hand to the ground. So we could do all those different things with different personnel and still be able to stop the run and play the pass. But they trust us, right? And they trusted me to just lined up in the right position.
When you think about, you know, teaching a kid to watch film, I mean, as coaches, we could take them through and spend some time in our classroom watching film. But I think you'd agree, you know, a lot of that has to be done outside the class as well. So for us to say, oh, you know, look at huddle and say, oh yeah, this kid put in, you know, an hour on watching film, doesn't necessarily mean he got the right things out of it. What things do you recommend to, I guess, both the coach and player to learn about, you know, especially from the linebacker position, watching film and being able to learn from it, because there's a lot of key details to focus on that start to tell you really what's going to happen. So what tips do you have in watching film?
Yeah, so here, based on what you said, immediately popped in my head, don't confuse activity with achievement, both as a coach and a player, right? Listen, don't just spend all the hours watching film when you should be at home with your family. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are you doing? Am I watching film to watch film, or am I doing it purposefully, right? So don't confuse activity with achievement. Great, the kid's on Huddle. Well, you know what he probably did? He probably put it on. He's probably playing PlayStation 4. You know what I'm saying? Like, because he wants to show the coach, right? But you have to – it's just like teaching. Like, why am I teaching what I'm teaching, and what do I want them to watch? Like, is there a sheet that you give them to fill out and say, okay, listen, here's this team in this formation. I want you to watch these plays, right? If I'm a linebacker, what are their splits? What are the tendencies of my guard and my tackle and my center? What does it look like? What are you seeing every time he snaps the football? What is the quarterback doing? Where's the running back depth, right? Where's the splits of the wide receivers and what I got to do if I got to go push the three, if I got to go push the hook curl, right? What does their play action look? Does it look different play action pass versus how they run? What am I seeing there? So give them the sheet. Like, I can't tell you what to do because I've been so far out of the game, but give them the sheet to write that down. And then based on what you see and they see, you have to be speaking the same language, right? But you as the coach and the teacher is the one that is dictating the language that they speak. So if you give them that verbiage, they're going to be able to put, okay, I know what split means between a guard and a center. If my backside guard and center is closer, they're probably running a zone because he wants to get up and B block and get up to the next level. I can see that, right? Put that in there, you know? So those are the things that I think that as the teacher, as the coach, you have to give them the answers to the test. They then have to take those answers and be able to put it into what they're seeing. Because if you and the student athlete are seeing the exact same thing, you're going to be able to learn it and you're going to be able to teach from their mistakes faster because, hey, listen, you showed me this. We talked about it. Here's what they showed us, which is exactly what we talked about, but yet you didn't go do what the call said for you to do. Why? Now you know, right? And now you have the same language that you can teach them what it is they need to do. That's why, again, it's so much like the weight room. There's only one way to squat. There's only one way to clean. There's only one way. But it's your language, right? You know what I'm saying? It's your technique. It's your language. You can't just have a kid come over there and, hey, this is how we spot the bench. And you got some guys doing, you know, some guys saying 1, 2, 3 up, I got it. And then guys just dropping their hands, looking at the coach, looking at their buddy, talking shop when the kid has a bar cage on his chest. No, we teach the spot like this. I'm coaching spotters harder than I'm coaching the dudes that are doing the work because I want the accountability from the student athlete to the student athlete. Engaged all the time to be selfless for his teammate. Like, I'm teaching that mindset all the time. Then I take that. Same language, my language, right? Coaches, whatever the coach's language is, this is how we teach it. And we're all on the same page before we even step on the field. Because the last thing I want to do is bring in this D-line coach, and I, as the head coach, am teaching D-line one way, and he's teaching it another. Now I got two kids, or, you know, one kid hearing two different languages. It's like a parent. Hey, you can't play video games. Oh, okay, yeah, you got your homework done. You can play video games. What the Sam Dickens are we doing? You know, dad's letting him play video games. Mom's not. Now we're not on the same team. So guess who's going to ask to play video games? Dad. Right? It's the same thing. It's the same thing. So the language needs to be consistent because you and the student athlete have to be speaking the same language. Conversely, with the same thing with the coaches.
Yeah, couldn't agree more with you. So we talked about the mental side of the game, which is certainly important, and the mindset. I know the next part you're really passionate about to the point that you've actually developed a company around it is the teaching of the fundamentals. I was out at, you know, an FBS school this past spring of 2019, and right at the beginning of practice, right after warmups, I should say, they went into this period, everybody, quarterbacks included, everybody on the team, they're in a two-point stance. They're loaded, and they hand strike. And this goes back and forth for 5 minutes. And I walked over to the coach, and I said, what's that period? What do you call it? He said, the difference. We got it from Ohio State. I said, wow, okay. So, you know, it was interesting. I came across your stuff on LinkedIn and saw the difference, and I knew exactly what we were talking about there. The fundamentals, you know, for you. Let's talk first before we go into a little bit about the difference here. The fundamentals of playing linebacker, and, you know, you played in a 3-3, you played in a 4-3, you played in nickel, you know, so it really doesn't matter the scheme. It's 3-4. It matters this technique that you're going to use, and, you know, it starts at the youngest levels and moves up through, and, you know, we have an opportunity right now, I think, if we rethink our weight room and our strength and conditioning programs a little bit, to start incorporating some of these fundamental movements right into our training.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I'm going to go back. So Coach Meyer said after we won the national championship, we were elite at two things: loaded stances and the difference, which is our hand placement and our hand striking. So let's go back to loaded stances, not taking a false step. Right? If I'm an average linebacker regarding my speed and I take a false step, I'm out of the play. Right? We teach, you know, if I rock back in my step as a D lineman, or I take a step back before I move forward as a wide receiver, right? Like, I'm behind the eight ball. So I kid you not, every warm-up, every time we worked on speed, everything we did was loaded stance. No ball step, shin angles, right? Like, everything we did from January through the season is loaded stances. That's what I'm talking about, the attention to detail. Well, you mentioned it from Coach Mick and Coach Meyer. The attention to details to how much better we'll be if we have a loaded stance all the time and don't take a false step. It is ingrained in our kids all year. Crazy, right? But we were elite at that. And he credited winning a national championship at being elite at a fundamental of loaded stances. The question would be, how often do you guys coach loaded stances in your high school programs or colleges for that matter? Or is it just haphazard because I believe X's and O's win the game as opposed to the fundamentals of our sport? Period. Right? Then you had the striking thing, the difference. That was Chris Ash and showing film of the difference between guys getting their elbows in, thumbs up in the breastplate of a guy. It's really not locking out dudes. Like, you don't really see that angle that everybody kind of talks about. I mean, when I played ball, it was hat in hand. They don't teach hat in hands anymore. Why? Because of concussions, right? They don't. But you better have a violent strike. And I remember in college, Mike Vrabel would come back and we would train and he would run me into the ground. Not Bobby. Bobby could run all day, but he could run me into the ground. I would just keep going, you know. But in the weight room, we would work on violent hands by hitting the concrete pillars in our weight room with our hands. As hard as you're hitting concrete. And then we would chain bench on with a NutriGrip bar. And then we would drop med balls on a guy and he would throw it back to work on that. And then we had that drill, the difference, that we incorporated in the 2014 season before every single practice, working on elbows in, thumbs up for 5 minutes. Across the team, everybody has to use their hands. The better you use your hands on special teams, the better your special teams are. Period. The better wide receivers can stock block dudes with elbows in, thumbs up, the less holding penalties they'll have. The better my kids are at having elbows in, thumbs up, the less they are having a potential an injury of getting their hand placement outside their shoulder and tearing a labrum or a rotator cuff. Like, that's real. That's real talk, right? So that's what we did, and our guys were really good at it. They were good at it. I mean, they were an elite-level striking team. And the one thing that I've seen from Pop Warner – to pros, but especially like Pop Warner, junior high, fifth and sixth grade, these kids don't know how to, every time they take a step, they should be using their hands. It's like the old school football game where it just vibrates. They just run into each other. right? You want to talk about we talk about being safe in tackling, like be safe in striking, in defeating a blocker and blocking people. Well, I can only do that, and I can only perform to that level of which I've been trained, but the only time we train it is during practice, and that's not enough time because I got to get into alignment, assignment, alerts, and adjustments. So there had to be a better way of doing it. And in 2015, Coach Meyer wanted to work on that drill in the 30 minutes that our coaches had, because the 8-hour rule, we had an hour that the coaches had, and they had it on our running days. And then after we got done running, they would break up and work with their position coaches. So I cut 2x6s. They were 12 inches long, and you had to have a partner, and every kid would strike it 5 times, hit it to the other kid. He'd strike it 5 times. They do it twice. They get 10 reps, and then they would throw 45 2x6s against the wall. And I'm just running around hoping kids don't roll their ankles on them or whatever. But we just got 10 reps, and twice a week they got 20 reps of striking without using a football piece of equipment. And I'm just like, man, this is stupid. There's got to be a better way. And I was like, you know what? There is. Let's take it and let's put it on a weight rack. Because it's called PAP. It's post-activation pronation. There's no difference between doing a squat to a plyo jump or some type of explosive movement to a plyo jump than doing a bench and a, you know, plyometric push-up. Except the plyometric push-up that I want to do is spring-loaded to the size of the kid that I have training. And he's working on elbows in, thumbs up, which is the game of football. That's why I did it, right? And I was really sold on the product when I saw Pat Elflein, who was transitioning from guard to center after Corey Linsley left, first or second round pick to Green Bay. And after we got done working out, he did 20 snaps and strikes right and left. So 40 reps, got a protein shake and left. And then I had a special teams kid come in on his way to his car, and he did 10 kickbacks right and left working on pump pro. So that was 20 reps, and then he went to his car. I'm like, that's the why. I got a product that I can stick directly in front of my consumer, which is the athlete who I'm trying to maximize, and they can work on the fundamental of our game right there in a workout. Boom. So then I decided to get out of coaching, got an MBA from Ohio State. Let's say, hey, let's see if we can make this happen. Now we're in our fifth year. Having fun.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's a really cool product. And I want to dig into all the things you can do, because, you know, once you invent something, everybody finds all kinds of different uses. So there's even a multi-sport aspect to it. Before we do that, though, I do want to go back to the difference, the loaded stance and the strike, the difference. Coach us through that. Because I think it is such a fundamental thing, but you guys put detail into it because that's what you do at Ohio State. Coach us through the difference drill.
Yeah, so I mean, basically the guys are lined up on the hash mark, and you get a couple groups because you got to go rapid fire, right? And again, there's juice and intensity, just like we do a dynamic warm-up, just like we do foam. I mean, we coach foam roll and band stretch like I coach a squat. Do coaches do that, right? Because if you permit it, you promote it. Like, as soon as you show up and we're warming up to work out, we're working out, period, right? So here we are coaching up band stretch, foam roll, glute activation, hurdles. Like, I'm coaching a squat. They go through a walkthrough, right? Then we coach a dynamic warm-up. Boom. We're intentional with the difference drill. So guys are lined up. They're basically the distance between the hash, right? So the hash is the difference. Boom. I'm in an athletic position. Well, what is that in the weight room? It's a trap bar deadlift. Right? So I'm in an athletic position, shoulders over knees over toes. My hands are on my thigh board. Coach blows the whistle. I can't take a false step. I got to roll off my big toe. Boom. Bring my hand, strike the dude on the breastplate. Run my feet. Does it for like a second. Boom. Blow the whistle onto the next guy. Boop. Boop. You know, and I'm going down the line. Then I come, coach runs back around, and I'm hitting him again. So it's so fast, but we're getting so many different reps now with contact. Right, with guys one-on-one, and they're competing because we teach competitive excellence in January. Hard to have competitive excellence. You're like, man, we only compete on the field. It's the mindset that you and I talked about. It is started in the weight room and agility. Competitive excellence is something that you can train. There is a winner and there's a loser all the time. And in life and in business, you're a winner or a loser every day. I'm a dad. I win and I lose. But I constantly want to be getting better. You know? So that's kind of the drill. And then they break up. Boom. Now we're into punt. And from punt, we go into field goal. From field goal, you go to individual. Now you're just in the role of practice. And everything we do in practice is competitive excellence. One-on-ones. There's a winner and there's a loser. There's a loafer. You know, all the time. So it's just that mindset, right? And the guys understand that being elite in hand placement and hand striking will make them better at ball, period.
The hand strike, the hand placement, what were the details that you guys would constantly give your players on that? Since you guys, you know, Coach Meyer said you guys were elite, what were the details of the hand strike?
Well, I mean, if you look at kids all the time, right, like they want to cock their hands down. Like, why do I got to cock my hands? Why can't I just deliver a blow when my hands are in front of me? Right? There is no cocking because by the time I cock my hands, the dude's already in my chest, right? So it's really, you know, first person, right, to deliver the blow is probably winning the day, right? So that's why it was so critical on the five board, because then if I drop my hands, the dude's already in my chest because he's taking a step forward, I'm taking a step forward, right? That's why being in the athletic football position is critical. So I got to be able to strike right from my thighs. Easy way to work that with your kids. Take one of those black bands that you would use for hip up and out clamshells, glute activation, right there, like a thin black band, and put them around a kid's elbows. Now the kid can't cock his hands back because they're together with this little band, right? So now I just got to be able to strike from there. Easy tool, you know? That was really, and where am I aiming, right? Am I in the breastplate? I don't want to be grabbing outside, right? I got to be inside. Inside hands win. All right, sometimes they beat me. Boom, how do I regain control, right, and lock out? So all those things happen in that 2 seconds, and we just get reps and reps and reps and reps and reps all year, right? Theory of marginal gains, just getting better all the time at the fundamentals of our game. And I think that if you look at the landscape of college football, the teams that are elite at the fundamentals are the teams that are consistent and win the most.
I think what's interesting about teaching that year-round, and especially we could look down to the lower levels, right? Down to youth football, Pop Warner, whatever it might be. Starting to teach that down there actually promotes safety. You mentioned it before, like, you know, those guys look like the old electronic football just running around bumping into each other, that we really have to put a premium on teaching these kids to strike with their hands and playing long.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, every time I go to high schools, this is what Texas does really well. But I'm like, Coach, you know, they'll get 10 striking machines for their high school. I was like, really, get 8 for your high school and put 2 in your junior high. You know, could you imagine your 7th and 8th graders getting 4,000, 5,000 reps a year of striking? Now that's 10,000 reps of striking. Now they come into your program, they already know how to strike. They're not lunging forward. They're not dropping their head, right? They're doing it with your language, right? Like, that's what it's about. I mean, it's just being able to teach that fundamental. And it's so critical to the safety of our game because they don't know how to use their hands because you only get them for a finite amount of time. And in that time, you're trying to install plays and teach concepts, right? And then teach them what the other team's going to do and how they can respond. We really need to go back, and this was my kind of thought process when I was coaching my oldest son in basketball. And, you know, he's an average size kid, but he's bigger for our city. But you know what? He's not going to be the biggest. And you have to develop everybody. So in basketball, don't just put a kid as a center because he's the biggest kid. Make them all learn how to have ball handling skills. Make them all learn how to pass. Make them all learn how to pass, screen away, or cut to the basket and play help side defense and have speed to power, right? How to box out. Everybody's got to box out. Same fundamentals that you teach. Who cares about wins and losses? To me, winning and losing is attitude and effort at that age, because there's going to be some kids that are more developed than others. All right, they got a better team. But we're working on fundamentals, and we're working on developing kids for the long haul, right? Now when I go into junior high, how am I developing and teaching these kids our language, our concepts all the time, our striking, our blocking, our weight room coaching cues? That's the system. A lot of coaches don't want to have that system because it takes time, energy, and effort away from them, because they're worried about their job and the here and the now and the present with varsity, as opposed to developing everybody, the coaches. It is hard being a leader and a coach because there are so many things that you have to develop. And you all, and to me, just like in business, you always have to focus on what moves the needle. And to me, what moves the needle in all sports is the fundamentals of the game. And all sports are pace, space, and angles. And how am I working on that in my strength conditioning? How am I working on that in the field? How am I teaching the strike? How am I teaching loaded stance? Well, here's how I do it. Boom. Dynamic warm-up. Here's how I do it in the weight room. Boom. The difference. Here's how I do it on the field. Boom. The difference. Loaded stances. Coming out of a route. All those things together. That is your system. Right? And sometimes, guess what? To get kids to want to come out to football and they say, hey, football numbers are down. I got a coach in Southeast Ohio on the river. He teaches leadership to all kids in the school. They're a Division V school in Ohio, which is tiny, right? In Texas, Division V is really big, right? The numbers are different, okay? But this dude is spilling it for all athletes. And guess what? They got phenomenal numbers. They got more numbers than, I mean, their school doesn't have necessarily the numbers, but they got more kids coming out for football than some Division II and Division I schools in Ohio. Why? Because their coach is a high GSF, and he wants to maximize everybody. And that starts with leadership. That starts in the weight room. Right? It starts with how he incentivizes them. Let's talk about that for a hot minute. Like, how are you incentivizing your weight program? Is it t-shirts for how much you squat and bench? Right? Or is it their attitude and effort? Because a freshman can't squat and bench like a senior. And if I'm promoting numbers, does that promote safety? Because who cares if I get a kid hurt, but he squatted 500 pounds? He can't play on Friday. Who cares? He can't do the other sports that he has, that he plays, right? I want to incentivize competitive excellence, attitude, and effort. Why? Because a freshman can win and he can lose. He can be a loafer or he cannot be. He can control that, right? He can have gains in the weight room by showing up on time every single day with a great attitude and giving great effort, and his maxes increase, but in a safe manner. I'm incentivizing that because I'm going to get more kids to come out. And I can reward more kids that way. They can be champions. It's not just about numbers, right? But if that is my system, right, I'm going to have more kids coming out because I'm going to be their champion all the time. And I'm going to be moving the needle for them to play other sports. You know? It's not rocket science, but I tell you what, it takes a lot of effort.
It does. But, you know, when we think about this, incorporating something like the difference – And I want to give you the time to talk exactly about what this product is, because I think it's simple, but it's genius. But incorporating something like this doesn't detract from all the other things maybe that you believe you traditionally have to do. So we don't even have to change your mindset on this is what a workout should be. But we need to think about incorporating some of these things into it. This explosive force, being able to deliver from the hips. It's all the application of the strength you're building in some of these other lifts applied directly to the football skill. We're building some of that skill as well within here. Skill that's important, as you mentioned, important to the safety of the game, that kids learn how to play this way, learn how to play with their hands, learn how to use their hips for leverage instead of the old, you know, hat and hands type of technique that we used to talk about. You know, incorporating this into a workout is easy. You know, you get off the bench where you are training a wider hand grip. So there is, you're building the strength, but there's not a direct application to what you're going to do in football. But now you get into, you know, what you equate to a plyometric push-up on the difference and work on those hand strikes. Now it's applying some of that strength and power you're developing right to an athletic movement.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's so many things in that question and even the product. I mean, but it was, you know, if I can superset a bench with a shrug, like immediately following with a strike, right, 3 to 5 reps. So I go and hit that bench just like I would go and squat and do 3 to 5 plyometric jumps, right, or a clean pull. Here I go hit a bench, and now I go hit the difference 3 to 5 times with a spring that's according, right? So, I mean, I got a green spring, a white, a gray, and a black, all different skill levels, all different tension. My 7-year-old can hit the green. Tennessee Titans, Ohio State, you can come out of a stance on it, right? So there's everybody can use it, but it's just being able to say, okay, I'm a bench, I'm going to come off, and I'm going to get 5 reps. You do 4 sets, superset with 5, you just got 20 reps of striking, elbows and thumbs up. Then I incorporate it into the end of my workout. Now I got a guy doing a pull-up. I got a guy doing a landmine or a face pull, right? Or a dumbbell row. And now I'm going to get, let's say 20 strikes. I'm going to do 3 sets of that. I just got 60. Boom. Within that one workout, I just got 80 reps of elbows in, thumbs up. Where else are you going to do that? Because the number one thing that stinks about working on hand striking, and every coach knows this, it's having a good partner. And they all stink, right? They're turning their body, right? They're not giving a good, you know, good surface area. Can't use pads, right? So we're going to use boards. They're still going to have somebody hold it there. Like, the difference was meant to eliminate the partner, right? There's other ways of doing it. Hit a med ball. Great. You can do that. Am I getting any type of resistance? I'm just hitting a surface, right? Am I building up my wrist and my forearm muscles all year? So when I go out to practice, I'm less likely to hurt my wrist, right? Because now I'm finally striking somebody. No, I'm building all that up, my shoulders and my chest, by hitting this one product that actually applies to our game. And that was kind of the beauty of it. And then just kind of now 5 years in, you see guys start thinking outside the box, right? Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, like, they use it, and there's a lot more that do, but they use it as a return to play protocol for their upper body injuries. You want to talk about safety and concussions? How do we handle a kid that has a rotator, an AC joint, or a labrum, right? They get treatment in the training room. We do some stuff in the weight room that we modify upper body wise, and then we donjoy them and we send them out to contact. Instead, progress them on the difference. Let them hit the green, the white, the gray, the black. If they have no pain, now they can go out and practice, right? Because if I can't strike anybody, I'm more likely to use my head or injure it again. Why do I want to do that? You know? So, I mean, again, this outside-the-box thinking, it's now a return-to-play protocol for upper body injuries, right? Great tool. Then let's start thinking about the landscape of – let's just think about football practice, right? Coaches, think about how you warm up. Now, this is something that I've seen and I've noticed as I'm in 88 Division I colleges and 22 NFL teams, how we warm up practice. This is how you warm it up. There's hurdles. There's band stretch. There's glute activation. There's a dynamic, or there's a walkthrough. Probably in high school, you don't have a walkthrough. Then you go right to your dynamic warm-up. The first period is hand striking or punt, and all you're doing is yelling at kids to have faster hands. Let me ask you this. Do you warm up your upper body before you bench? The answer is yes, so why don't we warm up our upper body before we practice? I don't know. So Ohio State, everybody before they practice, strikes the difference. I mean, think about it. It's stupid, right? We warm up the lower body because we all have to run 100%. Why don't we warm up the upper body? Quarterbacks do because they throw, right? We do it before we bench. Why wouldn't you strike? And that's where the product is really, to me, the beauty of it. It's a full year. It's an all-year full utility product. Besides all the other sports that you can use it for, lacrosse and basketball and baseball and volleyball, you can throw med balls at it, right? Like, there's all these different applications. But the fact that you can use it before practice to warm up kids on the fundamental that you're going to work on, your difference drill doesn't need to be 5 minutes. It could be 2 minutes, right? And so now I've incorporated that. So not only is a weight room tool, it's a in-season tool and also a weight room tool, and everybody can use the same product, right? Because I don't want to replace football sleds. Like, there is a reason for all these different tools. They're tools. The weight room is the number one tool to me outside of the fundamentals of the game that you do on the field, of working on the mindset and getting kids physically stronger according to their genetic potential to allow them to go be safe and do the craft that they're deciding to do, which is play football. Then on the field, there's different tools. There's dummies. There's bags. There's sleds. There's one-man sleds. There's a little shields that, you know, guys can put over their chest that have a tighter hand placement. Like, you look at the pads that are out there on the sleds. Like, it's in Ohio right now. Who's going outside right now today? It's 29 degrees. When I got up this morning, it was 15. Nobody's going outside and hitting a five-man sled. No one, right? Guess what? Do it in the weight room, right? Linebackers, are they hitting a monster five-man sled? Well, the pads on there are so freaking big, you're teaching bad technique. I want to aim small, miss small. If I aim 12 inches inside, which is the width of the striking machine, guess what? If I miss a little bit, 2 inches to my right, I'm still in the dude's breastplate. And if I'm there, I'm less likely to injure myself. And I'm also less likely to have a holding penalty. But I want to rep that 5,000 times a year. And that's how you do it. The coach's language. All that's not my language, but the coach's language. Hands and feet. Here's my step. Here are my hands. That's O-line. That's D-line. I mean, you can work on cut blocks. I had a coach call me up and was like, I want to work on cut blocks. I said, cool. Give me 5 minutes. And I had him. I had my buddy roll me a med ball. And then he would bounce one, right? And I'd thumbs down, boom, right? Eyes to contact, thumbs down, into a strike, speed to power. I just worked on a cut block in the weight room, all using legal things, right? I mean, so you're constantly working on the game.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to point out with it, what I love about it is I really think it is the right size when we're talking about striking. I see a lot of shields. I see a lot of sleds that aren't actually built to teach the right technique. The hands get too wide. There's not the correct surface or, you know, I guess, breastplate type of size that you can strike. And that's kind of what you've incorporated, something that's a little bit smaller and really gives you the right handles for where you want to strike.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that was the why, right? We had a 2x6 and I made this one that had, you know, it's in the shape of a body, right? It has some wings to it, but I wanted them to have an aiming point, right? And it was right in the armpit. So it gives them, like, there's no, like, you strike it right in the armpit, you know, on this dummy, which is 12 inches, right? So now they understand they have an aiming point because you see what you hit and hit what you see. And I want them seeing that all the time. And that was kind of the why behind I made it that way. And since, like, I mean, Gilman makes a great product where it's like a little shield and it's a smaller pad, right? I think Rogers is coming out with some smaller pads because aim small, miss small. It's just like archery, it's bow hunting, you know? That's how we practice. So that's kind of why I made the machine the way I did. But it's just critical to me of getting those kids that consistent language and those reps all year.
I think the other unique thing about it, and especially if we're looking at, you know, getting something like this into a high school, is that as I went through your videos, I thought it was really cool that I saw baseball drills, volleyball drills, basketball drills, lacrosse drills. I mean, every sport can use this, and that's the beauty of the product, because it is, you're training some fundamental movements. You are working on basically strength and conditioning type moves. All this can be incorporated for all your sports. So this isn't something that is only in your weight room for the football team.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's critical, right? And those are things that you learn. One, being a strength coach at Ohio State, you know, and winning a national championship, and actually while I was bootstrapping this company, I was working with men's women's lacrosse at Ohio State, which I really enjoyed because it opened my eyes to strength conditioning and different athletes. But for an AD to be able to spend money on a tool, right? Like, it really can't just be football only, right? Now it's specific, it's sports specific. And the beauty of it is you have the return to play protocol. You have the fact, like, Detroit Lions, Boston College, like, they don't have walls, right? They have glass. Architects aren't strength coaches for some reason, because they put all this glass in there and they only give you one drinking fountain in an entire weight room, right? Like, why? Why would you do that to me? You know? So you have to have a product that everybody can get use out of, right? And that's kind of the beauty of it, because one, you're going to use it all year. Two, everybody, male or female, can use it. And three, it's a great way of helping your guys return to play and keep them safe, because ultimately at the end of the day, we want more kids being safe, playing the great sport of football, right? That's what we want. And so that's kind of where the tool is. But it's just really fun to watch how other people have incorporated it and made it their own. You know, and that's really where I need to go now, is go to all the schools that got it. Like, how are you doing it? Let me film some of these videos, you know, put them on there. I just want to create a catalog, an inventory of just great clips. Or, you know, when coaches buy the product, like, you just talk to me. Like, there's nobody else here. It's just, I'm selling myself right now, and I got shipped out like 30 machines. Guess who's making a single machine? And and doing the books and doing the marketing and making videos like this guy, you know, so you just talking to me, and I love talking ball and how a coach could use it in their weight room. You know, it's just fun.
The video I saw recently, which I really liked, you added arms to this as well. So there's a lot of, you know, hand placement movement, hand strike movements that we do, you know, on the defensive line, even some with, you know, offensive line and pass blocking. You've incorporated some arms into this as well.
Yeah, everybody's got to use, I mean, everybody's working on hand fighting. I mean, we were doing this so long ago, you know, and that's probably the biggest jump between high school and college is the ability of guys to use their hands, right? So, you know, Larry Johnson, he's amazing. And I saw Coach Meyer talking about it on the big, on the Fox Big Noon kickoff deal, talking about his hand fighting. I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go make this. And I made it. And I gave it to him. He's like, I want 4. I'm like, okay, this was my data. I have no clue how much it costs and what I was going to do. But here's one thing I've learned in the business. I think it applies to all things. Take the roast out of the oven. You know what I mean? Like, if something happens to it, I'll fix it. You know? And so Louisville just got 4, and Ohio State's getting 4, and I didn't even talk to anybody else, but I just visited them, you know, and I'm shipping product. And, you know, it was all about, like, you're not going to have every single one have all these on there. It's an accessory. It's an add-on. If they already have them, or it's like, hey, I got a room. We got 6 racks. I want to put 2 of them over here on the ends with the arms and then the 4 in the middle. Great. You know? And so now you can have your routine because you're going to get kids staying in the weight room a little bit longer because they want to go work on their craft. Well, you only got them for so much time. And then the next group rolls in. So the whole thing is how I maximize their time. Right. And now I got kids working on hand fighting and doing drills that the coach comes up with, and they're called the difference drills. Not my drills, again, they're your drills, working on that with your language, and now they're coaching each other. Like, that's the beauty of it, right? That's the beauty of the weight room. It's the beauty of football, right? Accountability, team accountability, being a good teammate, working together. But you got to put it in front of them because even at Ohio State, and as blessed as we are, you walk out of the weight room and you're into the indoor, the in-ground sleds were still all the way across the field. It was really difficult to get guys to go over there and hit an in-ground sled on their own, you know, especially because it's difficult. They're hard. They're heavy, right? I got to bring some juice with it, and they're probably going to get 10 reps total. But if I got a problem like this, I can sit directly in front of them, incorporate into my workout, but also have some other things that they think it's ball. Now, when I'm done with my workout, I can go over there, and we can talk, and we can work on some things, and we can also talk about life. How's your home life? What's going on? Like, you got them more. Like, that's what we want as coaches. We want them because everything we do in coaching is all about the relationship, and relationships are always built on trust. And trust is my character, my competence, my connection, and my commitment. And when you're there with all those, during all that time, building that trust with a player, like, that is what's critical. And that's how you move the needle, not only on the field, but in their lives, which is why we all coach anyways.
Well, Anthony, I really appreciate you sharing all kinds of detailed information today, some great stories, some things you've learned, stuff on the technique, stuff on what you're doing with the difference. But if I were to ask, you know, what is the one thing that in your experiences and now as you apply, you know, the lessons you've learned to life, what's the one thing that really helps you find the winning edge?
Yeah, I mean, for me, besides my faith in Jesus, it's definitely attitude, effort, period. Right? I control that on a day-to-day basis. Like, you see so many people just walking around, headphones in, you know, not bringing the juice, not smiling at people. Like, attitude and effort, number one, gives you the edge, period. Because if I wake up and say, I want to go attack and dominate today, I can't attack and dominate when I'm feeling gloomy and I think the world's against me or you know, bad luck or whatever. No, I can control my attitude and I can control how much effort I give. Right? Because in business, everybody's different. Everybody has different skill sets. Somebody's, you know, an MBA, somebody's got, you know, an associate's degree in football. Some kids are bigger or smaller or stronger or weaker than others, faster, slower, it doesn't matter. But you can control your attitude and effort. And if I can get a kid to say he comes in every single day, he has a great attitude, gives great effort, he's a third string linebacker, but you know what, he plays the absolute face off on special teams and he adds value, like, I want that, right? I, as a coach, I walk in, I got a great attitude, give great effort, I'm picking up people all the time. I'm trying to maximize myself for the kids that I serve and for the staff that I work with. Like, to me, attitude and effort all day.
For our listeners out there, number one, where can they go to learn more?
Yeah, so, I mean, go to www.thedifferenceusa.com. There's all of our stuff there. There's videos. There's ways of purchasing. Our email's on there, support or sales at The Difference USA, or you can just type in Schlegel, my name, S-C-H-L-E-G-E-L, at The Difference USA. That's my email. Email me about it. Everybody in our equipment manufacturing space sells our products, so ask them about it. And if they don't, well, then guess what? Just call me, because we make every attachment for every rack, and there's always a solution. And how I've done this, like, I don't market. I don't market it. Like, I don't pay for advertising. It's all word of mouth, and that's how I sell it. Like, if a school is like, hey, I want – matter of fact, I had a school that said, hey, I want 15. I said, guess what? I'll sell you 5. They're like, who wants to drive? Like, I definitely want to sell 15, but at the end of the day, here's how I've done it. High schools and coaches are talking to each other, right? They're talking to college coaches. I don't want to say, hey, Anthony Schlegel sold me 15 and I only needed 5, and now I got $10,000 worth of equipment sitting over there when I could have bought more bars or bands or other equipment for my guys. Because if you believe in it and you get the right number, it's perfect for you. Your kids are going to get full utility, and you're going to be my brand ambassador and say, hey, you should go get this product because we use it all the time. And I had a coach here in town. He's like, all I know is this about the product. When I got here, they gave up like 27 points a game. And he's like, we went from 14 to 11 to 12. And we strike every day. I'm like, there you go. Right. And he has 5 of them. And I'm like, perfect. That's all he needs, you know? So it's just, but he's bought in. He's all in. And guess what? His players are all in. So that's kind of how I sell it. And yeah, I'd love to talk to people about it because it's fun.
Well, Anthony, again, I really appreciate your time, and it was a great conversation here, very informative. I love just hearing your lessons, the things you learned. So thank you for sharing all of that with us.
Absolutely, brother. Appreciate you having me on.